If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, Bob.
Go back 20 years ago, and the big headline here involved Governor George Ryan, didn't it?
No question. This was huge. It was both groundbreaking and controversial, Bob. If you go back 22 years ago, Illinois was the focus of the criminal justice world when then Illinois Governor George Ryan made the momentous decision to commute the sentences of 167 death row inmates. He cleared out death row in the state of Illinois. And though some of them went on to life sentences and that kind of thing, this was still such a major move. It was 2 days before Governor Ryan was set to leave office. It was the sharpest blow to the death penalty in decades. Received national, international attention. It happened after, as you'll recall, Bob, there was a group of Northwestern students under the guidance of Professor David Protes who were able to uncover exculpatory evidence showing that the man was on death row who didn't belong there. He was not guilty. And another man actually confessed to them and said he admitted he committed the crime. So how could we have faith in this whole system? It led to a moratorium on the death penalty, a thorough review. Governor Ryan himself reviewed every case, every death row case in Illinois history. This was a time also, Bob, you have to recall, when DNA evidence was becoming widely used. It was becoming cheaper and more effective and accurate. And so it was also finding out that some people were not linked via DNA and that other people were. There were jailhouse snitches who were being used, who were given lots of time served, like to leave their sentences in order to make give false information to investigators. And so there was a lot of flaws in the system. I myself at Channel 5 did a series report on false confessions and outed a cop who was linked to a series of putting people away for using false confessions is like really central to their case. So lots was there to be reviewed. We pulled here a clip from George Ryan making part of that historic announcement that he was clearing death row back in 2003.
So many years in determining whether someone was guilty in the first place, how fairly and accurately was it determining which guilty defendants deserved to live and which deserved to die? And what effect was race having? What effect was poverty having? And in almost every one of the exonerated 17, we not only have breakdowns in the system with police and prosecutors and judges, we have terrible cases of shabby defense lawyers. There is no way to sugarcoat what goes on. There are defense attorneys that did not consult with their clients. They didn't investigate the cases that they had, and they were completely unqualified to handle complex death penalty cases. They often don't put much effort into fighting a death sentence. And if your life is on the line, your lawyer certainly ought to be working a little extra hard to make sure that your life is saved.
There certainly was a lot of backlash and criticism of Governor Ryan at the time, wasn't there?
Yeah. You know, you go back and think, well, history might look kindly on that move because of what they unearthed, but there was enormous backlash, Bob. You know, politicians said, we need the death penalty. We can't be abolishing it. There are certain crimes that deserve it. Victims' families were saying, I know that particular person, I believe that person did, kill my family members and that kind of thing. And so it wasn't a decision that was easy to make, but Governor Ryan made it, and I know a lot of other states after that followed suit.
Now let's go to sports and 1988 this week in Chicago history. The Fog Bowl.
Oh, the Fog Bowl. Longtime Bears fan. We all remember the Fog Bowl if you were alive back then because it was such a big deal. You know, if you think about all the eventful weather games that the Bears have had over the years, this one stands out even in that context. There was so much going on that day this week, 1988, Bob. To start with, major grudge match as Ditka and the Bears faced off with Buddy Ryan and the Eagles. It was this weird fog thing, though, that if you just think about it, I know Skilling has talked about it many times. It was just that, like, the perfect weather conditions where it moved from 40s and sunshine on the lakefront to this, like, almost UFO-like cloud structure that just moved over only Soldier Field. So it was so strange. No one could see anything. CBS grounded their helicopter. They were covering the game at the time. The guys in the broadcast booth, Vern Lundquist and Terry Bradshaw, had to, like, look at a TV monitor because they couldn't see what was going on. Players had like 10 yards of visibility, but they still played the game. Half of the fans left to go watch the game on TV because they were so frustrated they couldn't see it. But here's a little clip we pulled from the infamous Fog Bowl at Soldier Field.
A blinding fog descended on Soldier Field in the middle of the game, obscuring the view with a thick, hazy cloud.
Any possibility of a view from the press box, our normal game coverage, is impossible.
The announcers could not see the playing field, but apparently the players could see each other, so the game went on. For fans in the stands, the game was invisible.
We know we're winning, but who are we playing now?
It's impossible to see, even from here. You can't even see the screen on the TV.
Many wanted the game postponed until visibility improved. Even those with the best view complained.
It definitely was a factor in the game. The quarterbacks probably couldn't see well enough to throw the ball downfield, and so it did become a quick passing route type of affair late in the game.
But the players were able to see about half the field, and officials ruled that was good enough.
Well, as long as I could see and the officials could see both goalposts, why we felt the game was playable, and then we kept under that condition all the time.
Yeah, young Dan Hampton in there. I think I was at the game. Were you, Dave?
I was there, and it's exactly as that report described it. I mean, you really could not see, and there was a lot of controversy after that game because the officials said, well, they could see the goalposts. I don't know how, but somehow they said they did, and he said as long as they could see him, the game was not going to be suspended. But the owner of the Eagles, Norman Brayman, I believe, was the owner at the time, was incensed over the fact they played that game. He felt that they were robbed, and Mike Ditka beat Buddy Ryan in the fog.
You know what? As bad as it was at the stadium, if you were watching on television, you really could see nothing.
Right.
Right. I mean, I'm sure the network wasn't happy with that. More Bears history now, and really the double doink qualifies as history.
Bob, we got to celebrate this anniversary. It's all we got. You know, it's what makes us feel better about a disappointing Bears season to go back to an even more disappointing Bears season in 2019. Which ended with a double doink as who can forget that one? Cody Parkey's now infamous kick that hit the uprights and the crossbar to put a fork in an incredibly hopeful Bears season back in 2019. Just recall that the Bears had a 12-4 record going into this game, a top five defense, so much hope. They were poised for an amazing postseason, so we thought. But then enter poor Cody Parkey, who had already managed to hit the uprights four times that season. And here we go. We pulled a little clip here for an against the Eagles, the game-winning field goal. He put on a horror show for Bears fans.
And, oh, he hits the upright again. That's impossible. And the Eagles run out onto the field, but there's still 5 seconds. So they've got to get back. He does it again.
It will be Philadelphia.
Did this hit the upright and the crossbar?
Bottom line, it doesn't go through. Upright. It looks like it bounced off the crossbar as well.
Oh, my goodness. The Bears' season's going to end on a double doink.
That kind of sounds like the 24-25 season we just finished, but that was 2019, wasn't it?
That was. Matt Nagy's face. I went back and looked at the video. Matt Nagy's face is priceless, the cutaway. Just like, what just happened?
Way back in Chicago history now, and this is an interesting story because we're covering the L.A. fires, but the Chicago fire actually played a part in the first library opening its doors. Tell us about this.
Yeah, I didn't know this at all, Bob, but I was looking into researching for the segment, and I noticed that 1873 was when the first public library was opened in the city of Chicago. It was a gift from the former Queen of England. Queen Victoria had received word of the devastation of the Chicago fire, how the city was leveled, and just wanted to do something for the people of the city. And so she decided, she sent a proclamation with a promise to supply 8,000 books to Chicago's people, a donation, she said, that should be used to establish a free public library. Before that, there were private libraries, but, you know, unless you were able to access them, you didn't have access to books. And so this was a major transformative gift for the city. She said, this gift will remain a mark of sympathy, a keepsake, and a token of the brotherly kindness forever from England. So huge impact on the city, and eventually, really, caused the entire build out of a network of neighborhood libraries that exist to this day. So pretty impactful.
I'm not sure we should be celebrating this, but tell us about the history of the radar gun in Chicago.
Yeah, you know, it's mixed emotions I bring this to you, Bob, but if you're driving on a local expressway right now and you see a sign that says a radar-enforced speed zone, you can thank a local company for that introduction to society, because this week, 1955, that company developed the first handheld radar gun for traffic enforcement programs, and it was introduced in Illinois, specifically to combat speeding problems on the Edens. Today, you'd be hard-pressed to be able to go 2 miles above the speed limit any day on the Edens, but back then, it was a big problem. The radar gun was introduced as the safety tool, and I read the papers back in the day said the $700 cost is actually going to be justified by the impact it'll have on safety. So they ended up in, you know, state troopers' cars and police cars and changed the face of history, you could say. Decatur Electronics was the company behind the first portable gun. Before that, they had stationary ones. So we can blame them, I guess.
It sure led to a lot of additional income for the city of Chicago, didn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. Speed cams now generate $100 million, Bob, a year just in speed cams. And the red light cams, of course, also dreaded and hated. Also led to multiple corruption investigations, as we all recall, indictments and bribe-taking scandals, because the companies have, done some dirty over the years, but we can't blame Decatur Electronics for that. These guys were geniuses of their time, and we're thankful, but I'm sorry that it was used for this particular purpose.
Yeah, maybe if the Kennedy Expressway express lanes ever open, we can once again get a speeding ticket, and we can look forward to that in the new year. Thank you, Anna DeVontis. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday.
Thanks, Bob.